Fundamentally Sound podcast, episode 11. Welcome back with your boys, Barstool Reegs, at Ben Brust. I don't know why I said your name first, but we're back. And we have some exciting things coming up in your life. So just an FYI, we may have to take a 2-week break, but we're excited.
Like it might only be 1 week. I think it might only be 1 week.
Oh, it might only be 1 week. That's good news for me and for everybody else.
If I sound like I've been dragged through the ringer and like a beaten man, it is because I'm on the verge of just, like, I'm fighting, not falling asleep right now between, so I'm getting, as a lot of people kind of know, I've been tweeting about it more, I'm getting married next weekend, not Memorial Day weekend, but the following weekend, and in the middle of all this stuff, we've been house hunting, which is just, I mean, you want to feel like a fake adult. And not only that, but the one that we have a signed contract on, knock on wood, that everything goes well with inspection, appraisal, all that stuff, I turn 30 next month.
Yikes.
I close on the house 4 days after that, and I get married to start the month. Like,
dude,
that's
RIP,
three of the four fake adult things in, right off the bat.
RIP Reegs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm dreading, like, what's it going to, like, is life going to be different? All I know is I'm looking forward to having my own basement.
Yeah, I don't know if this was EMTC, but I think you asked.
I was thinking about this morning.
Yeah, KFC. Like, what are the baseball terms? You know, like,
right,
a single is kissing a girl.
Right,
and,
like, when you think about in sex, you hear, you know, I got the third base. Or I say that, like, back in the day, you used to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm also engaged to that. Like, I'm in the doghouse. But you know, you hear that stuff, and it's like, I was thinking about it this morning. I was like, huh, I wonder what it's like for an adult. And KFC is like the perfect guy to ask, who's similar in age, kind of went through the same stuff in terms of when you get married and buying a house and all that stuff. And I was like, I wonder what other people think. Because in my head, I was like, all right, I think like single is, I was debating, like the four I had in mind were marriage, kid, buying a house, and I couldn't think of what would the fourth one be.
Grandchildren.
I don't know. Like, I think you would consider yourself an adult well before grandchildren, right?
Oh, so if we're talking strictly adultness.
Yeah, like what are... I mean, like, you don't consider a home run like an orgy. That's what I kind of consider, like, grandchildren.
What? Oh,
because I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, like first base, second base, third base. I'm just saying that
home run comparison. You're right. It puts it in perspective.
Right, like
that's
it stops
not
at like, sex.
That's not what we're getting across here. I don't know. We'll have to think on that one. But I just thought that was a pretty funny EMTC. I actually really enjoy that. I can't call myself part of the crew. But I do. It's just weird because you guys are Eastern time zone, all you guys are talking about that. And I think there needs to be some exceptions to that. But it'd be weird because if some guy waking up in San Francisco at 7 o'clock in the mornings, like tweeting, "Hey, I'm part of the EMTC," and then all of us are like 9 and 10 o'clock, who actually live in a real time zone,
right? Or going to like 8 o'clock because there's hate at eight.
There's hate at eight. Yeah,
right, like if you're out west, that's 11 o'clock Eastern time.
Exactly. So I don't know. I enjoy that at least, but I thought that was funny this morning. But you're getting married. You're turning 30. You're buying a house.
Yep. Yep.
RIP.
And here I am just doing a podcast with you.
Doing a podcast, watching game four of the Celts.
This is what my life has become. Like, I'm sitting in a recliner in my current bedroom with the game on mute doing a podcast with you, in which we'll probably argue about something that's just so dumb. And
did you have
no correct answer.
Did you have a podcast room in the potential house you might get?
Possibly. So, like, the master's on the first floor. The upstairs are guest rooms, so one of those I could turn into a de facto podcast room. And the basement's a man cave, like, it's a finished basement. So that could be a de facto man cave slash podcast room.
That's multifaceted.
Right. Like, my fiancé made the joke today, because I said something to when I was sitting before the podcast going, "Oh, man, just thinking about 2 months from now, I could just be sitting down in my basement with the TV on And she's like, we're getting married, and just immediately, like, pretty much not living together because she's just like, you're just going to be downstairs the whole time watching sports. I was like, yeah,
Perfect.
that's probably right.
Now, let me like just ask a couple questions about her. So, is she cool like with all the podcasts you do? I mean, some like some fiancés would be like questioning themselves. I'm marrying a guy sitting in a recliner doing a podcast that just watches basketball. Like, is this college still?
Right, like she gets it. She completely gets it.
She gets it. That's cool.
Yeah, no, like she's totally cool with everything. She's honestly like a huge supporter, and I mean, like you'll see, like obviously, like me and you are friends on Facebook. She like we'll repost the stuff that we post on there, and like Instagram and things like that. So she definitely gets it. She's like she kind of laughs. Like when we did, like when I was in Atlanta, and we did the show. She was like, you're really gonna do another podcast, like a podcast in Atlanta at night. And I was just like, yeah. And she's like, well, okay.
That's what we're doing. That's what we
So,
do here.
I mean, like, shit, we've been together for coming up on 3.5 years, 4 years. So there's no surprises anymore. Like, she's just like, yeah, I'm marrying just a loser who just wants to
I
talk
know
about
what I'm getting my
basketball.
yeah, I know what I'm getting myself
Right,
into.
exactly.
Now, so you met after college then.
We knew each other in high school, because
Whoa.
yeah,
So
so she,
didn't go to KU? Or UK? Why did I say KU?
yeah, no,
What?
I didn't go to KU.
No, I know you didn't.
No, she went to Penn.
Clearly.
She went to Penn State.
Okay.
So she went to Penn State, but she we went to the same high school.
I'll refrain from jokes.
I mean, I've made them all. That's honestly started 95% of our fights.
It should. I mean, honestly, I could. I guess
Because
I.
I
If
hate
we're.
Penn State. Like, I've hated Penn State my entire life. I have hated pretty much the Big Ten my entire life, with the exception of like Michigan. I kind of liked. I never hated Wisconsin. I just kind of think it's funny that now I just know so many people who went to Wisconsin, and the back-to-back Final Fours has kind of made Wisconsin a thing. But like, I always kind of liked like Wisconsin football. Like Wisconsin basketball never bothered me. Michigan, I always kind of liked. Michigan State was always fine. I always kind of liked watching Michigan State.
Hang
But
on,
the
hang on.
like,
I can't let you get too off topic from Penn State
I hated
because
Penn State. I always
I
hated
know,
Penn
but you're
State.
gonna love this story.
Okay, go ahead.
And I want to tell it because it's one of those things like we may never talk about Penn State again in this podcast.
I don't know.
So
Yeah, we
while
may
I
never.
exactly, so while I heard Penn State, I was like, all right, I gotta tell this. So when we flew to Penn State, I mean everyone knows this about when you fly in there, it's the worst place like landing wise.
Did
Like
you
you're
land?
it's
Where did you land? Did you land in State College?
Yeah, so I mean
Okay.
it's right in the like you're right in the valley and
Yeah,
it's rocky.
there's nothing there. It's the mountains.
There, exactly, it's absolutely nothing. So it's the first off, it's just the longest flight of the Big Ten season. It's the worst trip. It's the worst hotel. It's the worst food. It's one of those hotels where it's like you go into your room and there's three buttons. There's off, there's cold, and there's hot.
Yep.
And in the middle of the night, like you and your roommate like trade turns getting up and changing it to hot, and then freeze your ass off, and then go over there and turn it hot, and then you sweat and you're in a puddle of sheets, and then you turn it off, and then you're just so hot you need the air. It's honestly the worst thing ever. But that being said, this is the hotel where Jerry Sandusky used to take
Oh no,
kids.
that's bad.
Terrible,
That's
right?
so bad.
So we renamed it accordingly. The Sandusky Suites.
Oh.
Terrible, right?
That's so bad. What
Terrible.
hotel was it? Do you remember?
The Sandusky Suites. That's
No,
all I
but
know it
no,
as.
but I mean, do you actually remember the actual name of the
No,
hotel?
that's my point. I really don't even know the name of the hotel because it got renamed.
Was it? Did you guys always stay like when you traveled in the Big Ten? Were you guys mostly like the hotels? How close to campus were they? Did any of them kind of put you a little bit further away, or were you pretty much always on,
Yeah, again,
quote
that was
on
the worst trip
campus?
because it was further away. It was up in a weird hill. Like a lot of times you're on campus or right next to the arena.
Right. Like that's what I mean when I say on campus,
Yeah, like
you're
really
across the
close. And a
street,
lot
like
of
in the
times
Holiday
that's
Inn.
really, yeah, a lot of time it's really close to the actual stadium.
Right. I don't
But
know if
that.
any. I don't know if any time they kind of put you 7 miles away or something like that, just enough to be the annoying inconvenience.
No. And it's usually a really nice place, but that place sucked. The
What was
food
the
sucked.
best trip?
Everything sucked.
What had the best hotel for you guys to stay at?
the best hotel
in the Big Ten.
For some reason, every time I went to Iowa City and stayed in a Sheraton, those beds were ridiculous. I don't know. I love them.
So
I love
Iowa was your favorite trip in terms of just the hotel?
Just because of the sleeping arrangements.
Right, right.
I can't count. Yeah, no, I'm not going to. That's strictly Big Ten. That's strictly Big Ten. Because there would be like some NCAA tournament trips
yeah,
where you
right,
really
right.
nice places.
Like
and
the
we bring,
Final Four, I'm sure.
Oh, well, that was ridiculous. Yeah, but
right,
we
right.
you bring the Wii in a suite and everyone comes in there and you play Mario Kart. I mean, that's not what we do in the Big Ten. No, so.
The Big
All
Ten,
right.
You guys are sitting there like studying and like pretending to take charges.
Kinda. I was gonna say no, and then I was like, well, you know, it's kind of true.
Right. Like, I'm on to your guys' game. All right, so that was your. I think that we're gonna have a segment every show where we just have a random story of your playing days, whether it's like what hotel to stay at or just some random ass. What was the one? I forget the one we had last week. But it was what whatever
that was.
Did this
that
show
was
on.
My fear of graduation.
That's right.
Of not graduating.
That's right. I think we're gonna have a little segment every week of your
or the Festus Azili flicking me.
No, that's
pay.
What it was. It was the Festus. That's what it was.
I know so you love that one.
We're gonna have a random Ben playing story once a week, I think.
Yeah, and
random,
one of them was
no time. It's just gonna come up randomly in the show too.
I'm gonna mix in some overseas stuff. I'll start thinking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think I already gave away my Darius Sangaila one.
You did.
I gotta save some content.
I loved Darius Sangaila.
I know, and that's why you can really appreciate how cool it was for me to get fouled by him.
Well, when it was him and Rafael Vitoretta at Wake Forest, like nobody committed more fouls, like as a front court tandem, than Rafael Vitoretta and Darius Sangaila. Vitoretta was a little bit older than Sangaila, but they would foul no less than 42 times a game.
That's awesome.
That was, I mean, I loved it.
But how do those two do that with five fouls apiece?
I swear to God, like they were allowed to foul extra. Like, they would always be in foul trouble. Like they would end every game with like four fouls. But it was just like every game. Like they never ended with like two or three fouls. It was always four fouls.
I wonder if that was like just because they were loved doing it, or if it was like a strategy by the coach.
I think it was just more they weren't the most like quick laterally.
Yes, they're just brutes, so they make it
right.
They're
both Europeans. It's not like they grew up playing, you know, American high school ball, things like that. So they were used to like different style of game where you can get away with some hand checks and things like that. And
that leads me to like a really interesting point here about like I don't know if we want to, you know, label this as like the European thing. But it's, in my eyes, I don't think it's their fault. I think it's just what they know. Like, the Zaza play, like, I don't think he's being dirty. Even, like, I don't know, what's another good example?
I think it's a combination. Like, I mean, he's been here long enough to know kind of how it is. But, yeah, I mean, just...
It's just the style of play
well,
that
right,
they're used
right.
to.
It's like, I mean, it's the same thing, like, in America, where the style of play in New York's a lot different than the style of play in Indiana. It is like European play is just different, and it's on not just things like that, but the way they move the ball, the way they, you know, they're just their offensive sets, like everything's different when you grow up in that. And I kind of got into a little bit of a debate about this today, and this is a good transition to maybe think of this. Let's say Manu retires, because there's a lot of speculation that this was his last game. Who are your top five international NBA players of all time?
International.
Manu's obviously in there.
Manu's in there. I think
Parker's
Dirk is
in there.
Dirk is in there. Nash, maybe.
That's my question, is what do you consider an international player?
He's from Canada, dude.
right. But he also played, you know, college ball in America.
Like, okay, if
that's,
we go,
I guess, that's. I'm not disagreeing with you. Like,
No. I mean, like, you got to set
everyone,
the boundaries.
And everyone has a different. Like, somebody had Hakeem as an international player, which kind of started the debate. And I was like, you know what? I think he might be an international. I might consider him an international player. Like, he didn't play high school ball here. Sure, he came to college here. He played for Team USA in the 96 Olympics, but he also played for the Nigerian junior team. So it's like he's kind of that gray area. Do you consider him an international player or not?
Well, and you know who's another one? Who? Tim Duncan.
Well, here's the thing, though. The U.S. Virgin Islands is a territory. Right.
I know, but like it's not the grayest of the gray areas. Yeah, that's the grayer area.
Right, because that's you're talking a territory now as opposed to, you know, a whole different continent. So let's say guys who didn't play college ball in America. Let's say that what makes you an international player is coming over.
What about Big Z? Zydrunas.
I mean, I wouldn't have him in there.
No, not in the top five.
No.
What about Powell?
Yep, absolutely.
Yao Ming.
The question is, did he play long enough to kind of be in that? Because right off the bat,
I think he was like a 6 or 7 time All-Star.
Yeah, but All-Star games are kind of.
Well, I guess in one of the years he was the All-Star leading voter and he didn't play.
Right. Like there's. Yes, I agree to a standard that number of All-Star teams should be taken into consideration, but.
All right, let's do this. We're going to come up with this list together, and we're going to agree on five.
Well, I think we agree on four, for sure.
And let's do no college ball in America.
Like you have to come directly over.
So Dirk, Manu.
Dirk, Manu, Parker, Powell.
Dirk, Manu, Parker, Powell.
And Marc Gasol?
What about, like, Vlade or a Peja?
Peja, Vlade,
too bad Sabonis got.
Sabonis came over earlier, he'd be a no-brainer in this top five. He just came over so late in his career.
So we got four. I would
throw like the Marc Gasol, the Vlades, the Pejas.
Those would be the next three.
I'm trying to think who else.
Let's give them 5A, 5B, 5C.
I'm just trying to think who else. Like
Dikembe?
Who?
Dikembe?
He played at Georgetown.
Oh, that's right.
If Drazen Petrovic didn't die, you know, kind of in the height of his career, he would be on that list. Trying to think of like anybody else kind of in the old, like, I don't think like Kukoc would be up there. I think you're right. I think it might be one of those three.
But yeah, that's our top three for position five.
So we'll tweet that out tomorrow and see what people agree with or not.
Yeah, and if that's the list, I think that's a solid list. But like, man, it's really not that powerful.
I mean, it's five Hall of Famers.
Yeah, it is, but they're not like.
But you're also taking out guys that play, and here's the other thing is there will be guys that will jump into this top five because we're just seeing more international players coming over and being successful.
Yeah, and it's only growing in terms of
like that's what I mean too. Like
last year there was I think half. Oh, and this is another thing. Damn it! This is another thing that I wanted to bring up in my argument about people leaving early. Half the first round picks nowadays are guys from overseas.
I mean, it's a very draft by draft basis.
Last draft, I think there was at least 12, and you can look that up. I mean, that's a third of the first round guaranteed picks.
Yeah, but like this year, there'll be like three.
Well, yeah, it is a draft by draft thing, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get surprised and some of these GMs that their job is to live overseas. And find some guys for the NBA. So, I don't know. It might be trending, I think, more than three. I'd go over three in the first round. Just out of pure trends.
So, last year there were six, seven. There were seven in the first round. If we go to Draft Express for this year.
What's funny also is one of my favorite parts of the NBA draft is the second round. Just to watch the footage of the international players.
Right, that's where you get a lot of the draft and stash. But like that's where it makes sense, where you take like the 19-year-old kid that's been playing professionally for a couple years.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I'm just saying it's my favorite part.
I'm just making a point.
Yeah, I love laughing at the gyms and like the footage, like the terrible camera angles under the baseline, like trying to show off this guy's skill set. It's terrible.
So Draft Express has 5 in the first round this year, and a good hand, like a handful, like there's 3 of them sub 20, 4 of them sub 20. I'm not counting
yeah,
a guy. I'm not counting
again,
a guy like Terrence Ferguson.
I'm saying don't be surprised if some of those guys sneak up.
Yeah, just you know, it just feels like this year after Frank, like there's just not that like the European that's going to be a top 20 pick. Like going to NBADraft.net, they only have 2 guys from Europe in the first round. So I think it is more of a case by case basis, but yeah, I think you'll see those drafts where all of a sudden there are 7, 8, maybe 9 first round draft picks from overseas.
Yeah, and it's just they play such a style that, I'm not going to lie, fits where the NBA is kind of transitioning to. I mean, you went on your rant about the positions and how it's point guard, wings, and forwards, and
wings,
whatever.
Wings, stretch, post, and LeBron, yeah.
Exactly. Like, that fits these guys' skill sets overseas. They dribble, they pass, and they shoot.
You have a lot more of the bigs that are the stretches. Like,
That's what I'm saying. That's what they teach, and right. Like they dribble, pass, shoot, no matter how tall they are. Ever since they were 8 years old, and they start playing professionally when they're 15, 16 years old. So it just fits the transition when they come over here because the style of play matches, you know, what they're used to and everything that they know.
Right, and I agree, and that's why you'll see more of like a Kristaps and guys like that coming over, Rudy Gobert, you know, people like that that are bigs and can do a little bit of everything. But I mean, it's interesting though, because Manu is, he's almost like the pioneer of it just because he.
Oh my goodness. Sorry. I had to look this up and I wanted to ask you. Boston Celtics plus 14 second half.
Oh man. What are they
down
right now?
They're up 10 at half.
I would be inclined to take them plus 14 because that gives you.
So what? They can't lose by 5 or more.
Actually, no. I would take the Celtics minus 14.
You mean the Cavs minus 14?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, the Cavs minus, and then it's 49 points for the Celtics. I don't know. I might go over 49. I think if Boston, even if Cleveland makes a comeback, Boston's going to hang around just because they're confident right now.
Yeah, I would go.
I'm going over 49 for the Celtics.
So I would. All right, let's get back to what we were talking about. yeah, I mean, it's interesting watching the international develop. I love Manu. I absolutely loved Manu. Being a lefty, he was kind of like always careless, crazy type player, you know, jump into things. I think you can make an argument for him as the second best passer of our era behind LeBron.
No, you could. I mean, he's definitely that talented.
I mean,
I just hang on. I don't know why you wanted to jump out of my bed so quick. This is good material because now when we put this out right after the game, I promise you, and then tomorrow people are going to be like, Ben's an idiot. And the good news is I can't get blamed for other people losing, and that's why I do it, because I know we're recording this, so people are going to listen later. Because when I'm live, like I was on the radio, I actually like did some of these over-unders for things, and I'm already being held accountable. And like, hey, I'm going with you on this one. I'm like, great. But now they can't go with me. They can just listen and then make fun of me.
Right, right.
But anyway, I want to get to what we really need to get talking about. Because there's a lot of different guys that are coming back right now. Moving to the college basketball players and people coming back this year, some big time news.
Yeah, and one of my friends texted me this morning when the first kind of rash of players announced they were coming back, where the question was, you know, next year's draft is considered weaker to this year's draft. do these guys coming back like enhance the class for next year? And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that's kind of a myth to an extent, is where you come back and all of a sudden a guy makes a jump from like a late second round pick to now being a lottery pick or something like that. Like, it just doesn't happen. That it happens. I mean, you get Buddy Hield every once in a while, but you're not, it's less common to happen than the guy falling out of the first round or something like that.
It is less common to happen, but I think
it's awesome for college basketball. Don't get me wrong.
It's awesome for college basketball.
But from an NBA draft standpoint, don't read too much into it.
But listen, I agree from an overall standpoint, but you got to look case by case, because I think it's a case by case situation again. And I think a lot of the guys that are coming back have a really good chance of being lottery picks even next year.
Like who?
I even think like a Travion Blewett.
No, I bet he's never more. I bet he doesn't make the first round.
You think?
Yep.
I think he's a guy in that system, because he's coming back with a good chip on his shoulder and he's going to have a good team. If he leads them to a Big East title and is the leading scorer, I don't see why not.
Because he's also now going to be a year older. I think he's kind of hit his peak in terms of like we know who he is.
Listen, I think he hit his peak of last year, but I think if he comes back and stays on that peak and takes it to the next level, he's got a chance to be a lottery pick. So the opportunity is there. I'm not saying that Travion Blewett is going to be a first round lottery pick, but he made the decision now where in order to be that, and he's betting on that, that's what he has to do.
I don't think he's betting on that as much as he is like he could always go play overseas or whatever. So I pulled up two mock drafts, NBADraft.net and Draft Express, which are two sites that I think are fantastic. For 2018 mock draft, NBADraft.net doesn't have him getting drafted, and Draft Express has him. I'm just scrolling through now. They don't have him in the top 60. So neither of them have him getting drafted.
When was it updated?
I mean, this was updated as of like within the last week. But so he wasn't on this year's draft either, though.
That's okay. Again, I'm saying he has an opportunity.
I mean, I think for him, him to be a lottery pick, he would have to make a bigger jump than what Buddy Hield even made.
That may be fair, but I just for some reason I like his opportunity with the team coming back.
I think he's a great college player and will be a very successful overseas player. He might go D League and get a couple, you know, get some time and making his way through there.
What about a DJ player. Wilson?
Wilson, he could be a guy that comes back and jumps into maybe the late lottery top 20 type guy. Honestly, I think he stays in. I think he's going to make a jump up this year's draft. I think he stays in, and I think you see him crack like the top 25. He's just got that type of body and game that NBA teams love.
Sorry, I'm just thinking of some names. What about like a Miles Bridges?
Bridges is he was going to be a lottery pick this year. He's going to be a lottery pick next year.
Was he predicted lottery?
Oh yeah.
I thought he was late.
No,
later.
No, he was like top 12.
Oh well, then he's not a really good example.
My fear for Miles Bridges, which I don't think happens, but my fear for him is he doesn't put up the numbers that everyone kind of expects and falls back a couple spots and loses out on a little bit of money. But I mean, I think
he's going to have a monster year.
He had a historic year this year.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's going to have a monster year this year.
But I'm just saying that's a lot for him to – for him to have, like, a great year compared to this year, he's going to have to do a lot, which is kind of crazy to think about. Like, you know, you expect him to be this great player. Well, like, what happens if he ends up being, like, second or third team All-American as opposed to first team? It almost looked like a failure. I say that very, very loosely. Failure of a year. It's just – it's a weird situation for him because – it's hard to improve on a draft stock when you're like a top 12 player.
When you, you know? Exactly. You can only, you almost can do more harm than good. Right.
That's my fear. But I mean, I think he's a great player. I think he's going to have a great year. I think All-American.
Yeah. Team. I think we've put it on the record that we want him to stay healthy.
Yep.
100%. Sure. We've already done that.
Yeah. I'm a big Miles Bridges fan. I want him to be healthy.
Yeah.
But I think what you'll see is guys, you know, like an Angel Delgado, who I think was, especially when you talk about like the Power 6, Power Main 7 conferences, Main 8 conferences, he was the most underappreciated college basketball player this last year.
Yeah, but I don't think that's all of...
like him coming back now, he can
No, I will say it's kind of a little bit of his fault, because I thought their team underachieved this year big time.
Yes and no. Like
they lost.
They got caught off guard without having Isaiah Whitehead.
Without Whitehead, they struggled. But I still thought with their experience of a team that won the Big East tournament title, they would have come back and at least been a little bit more competitive in the Big East.
But they, I mean, they ended up.
They made a run, but they weren't like down the whole
the top half. They were what, the 4 or 5? They were the 5 seed, I think. So they still finished in the top half of the conference.
I hear you, but I was just expecting more out of that team with his money pieces coming back.
Yeah,
so I'm expecting more again now with him coming back as.
Oh, I'll have them. I think they're a top. The only other person I've seen them love them probably more than me is Rob Dowster, and I think they're like a top 15, top 16 team in the country in the preseason.
Is it Rodriguez?
Rodriguez?
Yeah, does he come back? Yep.
Him, Kenin Carrington. Delgado, Miles Powell.
They got in recruits.
They have one recruit coming in that's pretty good. But I mean, they also like Sanogo. Like, I think they'll be good. They're going to be a good team. They do lose Madison Jones, who was a transfer from Wake Forest. He was a senior last year. But Delgado, I think he could kind of be what Caleb Swanigan was to a degree, in terms of double doubles, you know, like
yeah, when, no,
every time, like he almost he was at this year, like he Swan or Delgado is 6th in the country in offensive rebounding percentage and 14th in defensive rebounding percentage, so, I mean he's going to be a double double every time he goes on the court next year.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that comparison of what he could potentially do. He's got that dominance where he could be. I don't know, 18 and 13 guy?
Yeah, so this year, let me just pull up the average this year.
Yeah, pull up his averages this year. We need a producer.
So producers. He averaged this year. Doesn't help my computer slow as shit, too. So he averaged this year. He averaged 15 and 13 this year. So
yeah, 18 and 14?
Yeah, or even if he puts up another 15-13 year, I mean – pretty good. He shot 54% from the field in 33 minutes. Like, it's not bad. I think a lot. And not only that, but he also averaged over 2 assists a game.
All right. So who's coming back that you think has the biggest impact on his team?
From a college basketball standpoint? Oh, man. I think Raleigh Alkins from Arizona. He's a guy that – he will put them in – a lot of people talk them as number one preseason team. You can mix around them, Kansas, Michigan State. Like, that'll be your top three next year.
Arizona, man.
Raleigh Alkins coming back was really big for them. If you're looking for a guy who's coming back that could kind of be the breakout guy, just announced tonight, Holiday from UCLA.
Yeah, I just think Arizona is just going to be ridiculous this year.
Yep, this might be their best team.
Do you predict the year? This is the year that they finally go to the Final Four with Sean Miller?
I mean, they have the talent. It's just all about matchups. Like, they've just gotten unlucky with matchups.
They have gotten unlucky with matchups, but at some point, with the roster and the team you put together, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, they should have made a Final Four, but... You know, like Brandon actually breaks his foot that one year. I think they would have been there that year if he's healthy. Because I think they might have been the best team in the country that year. But
With Brandon Ashley that year?
Yeah. That was the year you guys...
That was the year we beat them, yeah.
Beat them, right. I think they were the best team in the country that year. So, you know...
Because they had Aaron Gordon and Nick Johnson. Yeah. Those guys were no joke.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, Brandon Ashley breaks his foot in the last, 2 weeks of the season.
If they have Brandon Ashley, like...
They're the favorite going into the...
That's just a matchup nightmare for our team against them.
Like, right, because
we were guarding Gabe York and Elliot Johnson, Pitts off the bench. And, like, the roster would have been McConnell, Johnson, Ashley. Who else was I'm blanking. Hollis Jefferson and Gordon.
Yep.
So who would I have guarded?
Right. Right. And, like... That team's athletic enough to you could switch it and put a couple different looks on Kaminsky.
Yeah, either way, it just would have been bad news,
right.
Bears.
Right. So there's been a little bad luck for Sean Miller in Arizona. But, yeah, I mean, at some point they should make it. This year they have the talent to make it. There's no doubting that. So Raleigh Alkins coming back and giving them a point guard is huge just because they are now for sure a top three team heading into next year.
Who's preseason number one?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Do I want to go Michigan State? I might go Michigan State.
I don't know if you do. Izzo has a lot coming back, but
they returned everybody.
He almost still needs time with that team, in my opinion. They still, to me, were not like. Oh, wow. Sorry, I got sidetracked. This is why I shouldn't bet, because now I'm going to be unfocused and clenching my fists at the point that I only have 2 points 4 minutes into the second half. And, yeah, this is exactly what I predicted. Whatever I do, I'm just a mush. I'm the biggest mush in the world. Anyways, where was I? Oh, preseason rankings.
I mean, I think like they had the offseason. I think I might go Michigan State. If they're healthy, I'm going to talk myself into all three teams.
Believe it or not.
Is it
Arizona? Hang on, do you hear that?
No.
Sorry. Okay, good. Sirens, everything going on outside. Kansas will be good too, believe it or not.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, I could talk myself. You can make a case for all. Like, those three are your top three in some order.
Gosh, and then Duke reloads, and they got Trayvon Duval to commit.
Yeah, I'll probably have Duke around like 8, somewhere in that range. They're closer to 10, I think, than they are 1.
Honestly, it's going to be the same players, and we talk about this. It's going to be the same players this year. When I say players, I don't actually mean players. I'm going to read off. Teams like top 15 teams, it's going to be the same programs,
right? Like Kentucky,
Carolina, Villanova, Louisville, Carolina, Duke, Louisville.
Wichita
exactly.
State's going to be a top 15 team this year.
Carolina, Kansas,
Carolina,
West Virginia.
It all depends.
West Virginia with West Virginia with Carter coming back.
Yeah, I don't know where I'm going to have West Virginia. They're going to be an intriguing one because. Elijah Macon staying pro, and he was going to fill that Nathan Adrian role with Adrian graduating. So there's still a little bit of question. Like Carter coming back is obviously huge for them. I don't know where exactly I'll have West Virginia. They'll be somewhere between, like, I don't know, somewhere between 14 and 20 for me.
Yeah, so, I mean, the top 10.
Miami's going to be really good next year. Florida's going to be really good next year. USC is going to be really good next year.
USC is going to...
They get everybody back plus Derek Thornton.
And they can score at will.
Yeah. Cincinnati will be pretty good next year. Northwestern will be good next year. Alabama.
That doesn't sound right.
I know, but they're going to be a top 20 team.
Hang on. They've never had two good years in a row. So I'm almost going to be like the guy who's like,
Right, but they still return a lot from last year.
They return a lot, but they're in unfamiliar territory, and now they got a little bit of a target on their back.
You know who's going to be good next year, though, is Minnesota.
I know.
Because they only lose Akeem Springs.
Do you know what that feels like to me inside?
It's weird. Like, there are
Do you know how, like, the Wisconsin-Minnesota rivalry works?
Yeah, yep. You guys know each other.
Yeah, and I do. The only thing that makes me laugh about Minnesota is when PFT acts like he's a part of Minnesota because they're a part of Wisconsin. Have you ever seen that?
Oh yeah.
Because they get like the tuition on like an in-state tuition.
But there are some weird names. Like, not so weird. There are some unique names in the top 15 this year. Like Miami's. They've become like kind of a top 25 staple under Larrañaga. They're going to be a top 10, top 12 team this year.
So when you say unique, why are they unique? Because
they're making the jump from top 25 to now top 10.
Okay. All right, and top 10. Got it.
Right,
that's
right.
To say, because Larrañaga always got competitive teams.
Right, like they've always been in and out of the top 25. This year they'll be in and out of the top 10. Florida, they're going to be really good this year. It's going to be interesting. Like, there are, like I said, I think we agree on the top three. For me, with Carolina, it all depends if Tony Bradley comes back.
He's got to come back.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. Well, a lot of reports right before we came on said that rumor is he's leaning to staying in the draft. I mean, he's a guy that if he does come back, I think he could become –
I don't think – I just think he benefits so much from coming back.
I agree, but also, again, it's hard to know what his family situation is, financial situation. He might just need to go get – he might need to just go get the money.
True.
So it's always
– I don't know the story, so I'm not going to speculate, but
right,
I just know you can gain so much more coming back.
Yeah, so it's one of those like –
I promise this is the last thing that I'm gonna say about this game. Marcus Smart just banked in three.
Yeah, Marcus Smart shooting threes now.
Well, I mean, he had the Steph Curry Klay Thompson game in game three. Yeah.
there's definitely some interesting prospects out there.
There are, and who are your top three? Because I think our top three may be a little bit different.
Oh, I would say my top three teams is in no order yet: Arizona, Michigan State, Kansas.
You think Kansas for real?
Oh, with the include like Devontae Graham, Malik Newman, they're gonna be good. Like that backcourt's gonna be good.
What about inside presence again?
Well, remember they had Azubuike, who got hurt last year, is back. He was a really good freshman. Really athletic and protect the rim. He's going to be the key to their kind of their quote inside.
Did USA Today have them? I'm trying to think. Somebody had them like at two, and I was shocked. And I was
I would probably have them at three. I'll have them at three.
I'm going to go Arizona one.
I'll go Arizona 2, Michigan State 1, but you could probably convince me into Arizona 1, Michigan State 2, and I won't fight you.
Arizona 1, Michigan State 2, and then I'm on the fence between Kansas now, because you've talked me into that, and even Florida. But not for the top three, but even Florida.
Right. Florida's going to be like, I think Florida will be somewhere around like 11.
Call me crazy. I'm going to go Duke.
I mean, I don't agree with it, but I can understand where
you why make someone an argument. Would say it. Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, I mean, if they end up top three at some point, it's not going to shock me.
Yeah, because it's Coach K and
right. Like
Duke
at some point, I always just pencil in Duke and Kentucky as being like in the ranked number one at some point in the season.
Gosh. Kentucky.
Just two teams, it's just going to be the point of those two teams you just penciled
you in. Just expect it.
Right,
at some
right. Like, they're both going to be good this year. They're both going to be top 10 teams in the preseason.
So what do you think Kentucky's outlook is realistically for
– I think it's another Final Four potential team. Kevin Knox committing to them was so big.
They always have Final Four potential teams. But, like, this may sound weird to say because it's never a quote-unquote lock, right? It's never a lock.
Right, because
it's all – is this because, like, the 38-1 team, though, even going into the season – that team was a lock for the Final Four.
Yeah, that was the
team.
I just don't think this doesn't feel like a lock by any means like that.
No, but it's got the potential.
So if Diallo comes back, to me,
Arizona, that's a lock Final Four team, just with the asterisk because it's never been done before under Sean Miller.
Yeah. I don't know, this year doesn't feel like a lock to any team this year, but for Kentucky, if Diallo comes back, which there was a report saying he was coming back tonight, we'll see. Obviously everything comes back. Wednesday night is deadline. If he comes back, there's a very good chance this will be Calipari's best defensive team.
You are jumping the gun on that.
No, you can't
say that the 38-1 team was the best defensive team in NCAA history, and then that this team could be the best under Calipari.
Well, I don't know. I mean, were they the best defensive team in NCAA history? Like, I don't know if that's a fact, but there's a chance this team could be, because this team has all a bunch of height, length, and athleticism.
Like, I'm sorry. I lied. That is why LeBron is the greatest of all time. Yeah. Because of that pass right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one understands his instincts and what he does, how many things he can do on basketball court. But keep going.
And he's the size of Karl Malone. But, there is a chance that this could be Calipari's best defensive team, just when you look at like the length and the size and the athleticism this team has compared to other teams where there's kind of been a weird defensive matchup at some point. This year's team doesn't really have that. Again, this is if Diallo comes back. They're just going to test out of the gym, and what I think people forget with Calipari is he loves the, like, he's a defensive coach first and more than he is an offensive coach.
Yeah, no, he, like I said, that Kentucky team, I'm kind of glad I didn't play against them because there was not a lot I would be able to do.
So you've been probably shooting over either Devin Booker or Aaron Harrison.
Well, I think Aaron Harrison guarded me the first time we played.
And then I'm saying the second game, you would have. That's like the two guys who probably would have been.
A good 6'6"?
Oh yeah.
And that's like one of their smaller guys.
Yeah.
That'd have been fun.
That would have been real fun.
Switch me off on, on a screen. Willie Cauley-Stein jumps out. The last possession of the game when Trey missed that shot, Calipari put, Poitras on me.
Yeah.
He literally put Poitras on me. And I just was so pissed because I was like, you know what? There's absolutely nothing I could do. I could get a shot off if, you know, I had some time and could come off a screen or space. But with 6 seconds left, you know, if I got the ball, what am I going to do?
Right.
What am I going to do with 6'9", 230 on me?
Right. Yeah.
Gosh.
Have fun with that.
Well, no, it just kind of pissed me off because I was like, when it was when Harrison hit the three, I was like, all right. Maybe it's another Michigan moment. You know, you got to believe and stuff like that. And I walked out the huddle and Poitras was on me. I was like, oh, well, shit, not going to be the Michigan moment.
It's always fun trying to shoot over taller athletic players. Like, I'll never forget the first time, like, one of the Moores twins switched on me. And I'm just like, oh, god damn it.
Did you know, like, are they, like, are you able to tell them apart back then?
Oh, hell no.
No?
Hell no.
Because so, they look really similar.
They have the same exact tattoos now. They didn't have tattoos in high school when we played against each other, but they look, or, I mean, they look
or the beards
same.
And yeah, or like the beards, like they have different beards now. So what I'm, that's what I was wondering, like
right,
back
no, they
then,
were they
just identical?
No, they were, yeah, they were baby faced in high school. Shit, I don't think they had a beard at all in high school, but they, Yeah, they looked identical, and they wore one number apart. One was 41, one was 42.
Yeah, that's tough.
It was just like, wait a minute, our team, we switched everything. We switched every screen, so we'd get switched onto them quite a bit. I did switch on them quite a bit, and they were a little bit different in terms of games. One was more of a post guy. One had a little bit better mid range, so the scouting report was different on them. And you're like, you get switched on, and you're like, oh shit, which one are you again?
So what's your that just like, and this happens a lot in this podcast. I think people have kind of know what they signed up for. Because for some reason on this podcast, it's late at night after million things happen in us in our lives that we're just kind of scatterbrained. And I just want to know like what your defensive philosophy is.
In terms of what? Like,
just in general, what are your rules and principles? Like, how are you going to handle ball screens? How are you going to handle screens in general?
Well, I guess it also depends on your team.
I do like
being able to switch everything.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, I don't need to get all tactical specific on me.
I'm a big fan of switching screens, fronting the post with weak side help. I'm fine with that. But again, you have to have the right team to be able to do that. I would never run a 2-3 zone.
I tell you what I like that I think teams should do more often because it messed me up when I played. Is the start in zone, go man, and then start in man, go zone.
You know what I like?
If you can figure it out, like it's tough. You gotta like, as a team, like you have to work well together to do it. But if you can go from zone to man and man to zone, I think it's super effective.
You know what I like that we ran that I haven't really seen, or at least I haven't really paid attention to. We only ran it like once in my career. We started in a 3-2, and the guy in the middle up top in the three would drop, so it turned into a 2-3 depending where the ball was. But it rotated between a 3-2, 2-3 during the possession. So it made the other team think.
Yeah, and then they're yelling at the coach.
Front, are we going to odd front offense or even front offense?
Yeah, they're yelling at the coach. It's 2-3. And then he's like, no, it's 3-2. Right. Like, and then they don't have to play.
We would show 3-2, and you'd put kind of your athletic wing in the middle there, the guy who could run up and down and provide a little bit of rim protection. I would run that. Like if I had to run a zone, I'm very much a man to man guy. But if I have to run a zone, I'm running that type of zone where it makes the offense think. I'm not just especially, running like a basic.
Especially if there's a shot clock too. Like
right, that's what I mean.
You'd be surprised on if they don't get organized. If they don't get organized, there's no good rhythm to that offensive possession, and then you're throwing up a bad shot late in the clock, and it's exactly what you want when you barely play zone.
And with a 3-2,
you switch to a zone.
You don't see a 3-2 that often. With a 3-2, the offense should attack from the wing where they have to, the ball has to move laterally. They have to penetrate from the wing as opposed to up top, and you have to hope that they make the right read to either skip it across to the other corner or the defense collapse and they have to read to pass it up top. So it makes you think a little bit better. 2-3, you have a little bit better vision, I think. I would, it's my defensive philosophy. It's strictly man-to-man. If I have to run zone, I'm probably going to run like a 3-2. I'm not going to run a 2-3. Prefer to switch everything, front to post, weak side help. I would be aggressive too. Like I like traps. I would press three-quarters court. Just never let the offense get comfortable. It's kind of my defensive philosophy.
Yeah, we're different in that way. Like mine would be way more reserved, less aggressive, 1-2-2 into man to man, and the 1-2-2 would be like a 1-2-2 where you literally could not get beat by it,
right?
Because it's so soft, but at least it's taking time off the clock, getting them out of rhythm. I like the soft pressure that makes people uncomfortable, not to the point where they're going to turn it over, just to the point where they're like annoyed by it.
Yeah, like I would throw like a 2-2-1 in or a 1-2-2 three-quarter court.
It's a rhythm killer.
Right, with maybe the trap depending where they catch the ball in the front court.
That's where we're different. Like
but if they catch it far enough up and like, not in the center of the court, like let's say they catch it on the wing where they can't really start an offense, I'd be willing to like throw the trap there.
I tell you what, I think I killed all of what you're supposed to do in youth basketball, right? Like I came from when I got done being overseas, I just helped out my brother-in-law, and I ended up coaching like a seventh grade team, which was a nightmare. First off, second off, these kids were terrible. A kid in seventh grade coming in off the bench, catching, dribbling, picking it up, and then dribbling. I'm getting the guy double dribbling in seventh grade. So I played 2-3 the whole time. I'm supposed to be teaching these guys man-to-man and stuff they're going to know to get better. I was like, no, I'm too competitive. I got to figure out how to get blown out by 25 instead of 45.
Right.
Like, that's a big difference.
Yeah, well.
That's a huge difference. So I played
most kids zone. Aren't good at basketball.
I played zone the whole time, and I didn't let my kids come out of, the free throw line above. Right. If they shot a mid-range or a three, all I ask is you can test it.
Yeah.
Because if we go man-to-man, they dribble right around us, get a layup.
Yep. So, all right, let's end on that. We got an hour for everybody. It's late. God knows what's going to bring us to us tomorrow in our everyday life. So we'll end on that. Follow the show, Fundamentally SD on Twitter. Find us on iTunes. It looks like we may have gotten the picture situation fixed. Follow us on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, review.
It's a picture situation. Picture gate.
Yeah. Don't let stupid podcasts like ones out there beat us in the rankings. You know probably which ones I'm talking about. So make sure you go on.
Oh no. This is breaking news. Kyrie, this is breaking.
Kyrie does not look good right now. Which please don't let this happen. I want to see a great finals.
No, he's fine. He's fine. He's fine.
So follow, rate, review us on iTunes. Follow Ben at Ben Brust. Follow me at Barstool Reegs. We'll be back again next week. In the meantime, continue to listening. Thanks for listening. And we will definitely have something.